Welcome to the Mind Blown Podcast, where curiosity leads and discoveries follow. I'm Melanie Avalon, biohacker, author, and health influencer. And I'm joined by Scott Immens, entrepreneur, health enthusiast, and seeker of the unknown. Together, we're here to take you on a journey to the very edges of science, technology, philosophy, history, and beyond. Did you know in the minute it takes to introduce this podcast, around 6 million Google searches will be conducted, and at the end of 90 minutes, the space station will have orbited completely around Earth? Did you know when you shuffle a deck of cards, chances are that combination has never been created before? Also, according to Einstein's theory of relativity, time doesn't pass at the same speed for everyone, depending on how fast you're moving. Or how about the idea of quantum superposition? That's that particles can actually be two places at once. So is this actually happening right here, right now? One last fun fact that actually inspired the genesis of this show. If you remember Tinkerbell dotting the I in the Walt Disney logo, that never happened. So on that note, get ready for our adventure on today's Mind Blown Podcast. Welcome back, cognitive connoisseurs, synapse surfers, and epiphany enthusiasts to the Mind Blown Podcast. I'm Melanie Avalon. I'm here with Scott Immens. Scott, how are you today?
Hey, Melanie. I'm good. I'm recovering from my hours of power washing.
That's good. I feel like you're always recovering from something.
Yeah, these houses are 10 and 20 years old and a lot needs to be done. So hedge trimming, lawn mowing, holes being dug, showers being rebuilt, lots of stuff.
Well, will it always be happening indefinitely? Like, does the limit, will you ever?
No, I think we're getting pretty close. I've gotten all the major stuff done. Now it's really the power washing, painting, and a little bit more organization in the garage, but that should do it.
Awesome, awesome. Well, do you have a mind-blowing fact to start us off with?
I'm going to give you a selection. We have one on a bizarre psychological operation carried out in the 50s. One bizarre fact about a town in the U.S. or one bizarre fact about the human body.
The first one sounds long. Are you sure it's a quick fact?
It'll be quick, and then if you want to hear more, you can hear more. How about that?
How about I don't pick that one then? I don't trust you. It sounds like an episode. Number two.
Number two.
The fun fact about a town.
I really wish you would pick number one.
I'm not. I refuse. You shouldn't have given me a choice because I refuse to go that route.
So would you believe that there is a town in the United States with a population of one human being?
Oh, see, Scott, okay. These are the types of facts we're going for. This is great.
Well, I knew you'd like this one. That's why I selected it as one of your choices.
Mind-blowing.
There is a couple of other fun things to note. She is the librarian, the mayor, the bartender, the farmer. Basically, the everything person. If there's a job, she does it.
Did she form the town herself? Wait, so was she not in a town? And how did this happen?
Well, I don't have the history completely, but I can get a little bit more.
Where is this town?
This town is Manoe, Nebraska, which means flower.
Oh, I should have guessed where it was. I feel like I would have said Nebraska.
You know, I would have said like South Dakota or Wyoming, I would have gone with. But Nebraska is a good guess. So yes, the town's name is M-O-N-O-W, Manoe, which means flower in Native American.
Is she Native American?
I don't believe so. Her name is Elsie Eller. Again, mayor, librarian, clerk, treasurer. Now, it was listed as a population of two, but her husband passed away, and so that was a misrepresentation. So the town actually started out in 1910 with a population of 109.
Oh, it dwindled away. It's not like one person established a town. It dwindled.
It dwindled, yeah. And then it went to a bustling 123 people. Then I think something happened in the 50s, which is probably like the automobile era, because at that point it went to 67, 40, 16, 18, 6, 2, 1, 1.
Wow.
A precipitous decline in the town.
So unless she has more kids, it's going to be a town with no people.
I think this town is headed for extinction unless someone moves in. I mean, she's 89, so, you know.
That makes it even more interesting that it was an actual town, and now it's just her, and she does all those roles.
Yeah, but I guess if you're the mayor, and you're the only person, it's pretty easy conversation. She's also the librarian.
Is there a library, though?
Well, I would imagine there's a small little library, because it was at one point a town of 100 people.
Okay, wait, this is getting more mind-blowing, because if there's like a whole town there.
She issued herself a liquor license.
Okay, wait, I gotta look up this town.
Mono W-I, Nebraska.
I need a picture.
The post office closed in 1967.
Wait. I love the sign. So there's this dilapidated building, and it says Monawi, and then it says Home of the Night Owls, spelled N-I-T-E. Oh, there she is with her books and her sign. Oh my gosh, it's so cute. It's a ghost town.
I know. We should move to that town, or you know, like repopulate it. It could become a nice little town.
I wonder if there's potential, like, say you had career goals and such. I don't know what career goals these would be, but I wonder if you moved to a town like this and then you made yourself the mayor, like, would that help you in your career pursuits in life? Because now you have all these titles.
I think if you moved there, became the mayor, applied for some federal or state grants to like create some infrastructure, you could make a name for yourself.
That was a great fact. I find it very mind-blowing.
I thought you'd like that one. Right up, that's your bizarre, weird, human, crazy stories that you like.
Yes. And she's a night owl. I'm going to give that a 9.5.
Bam. I think you would have, even though I like the other fact better, you probably would have given that an 8. So I'm happy you selected number 2. Yeah, that's a fun one. That's a fun story.
I wonder how far away the nearest neighbor is.
I wonder if the nearest neighbor ever comes to visit.
I know. I should invite her onto my podcast.
That would be a heck of an interview. If she has internet.
We should have her on this podcast.
Wow, that's a great idea.
Oh my goodness, I'm making a note.
We might have to send her a cell phone.
Yeah, that's... Oh, right. I'm going to make a note of this because I would love to interview this woman. I have so many questions for her. Okay. Ready for my fact?
I am ready for your fact.
Okay. So, my fact, are you familiar with Pop Rocks?
Of course.
Did you know in the 1970s, the FDA had actually set up a telephone hotline for concerned parents thinking their children were going to explode?
I did not know they had set up a hotline.
In Seattle.
I did, however, know that there was a massive fear and rumor mill that the kid from the Life cereal commercials, Mikey, died from eating Pop Rocks and drinking soda, and that if you drank soda and ate Pop Rocks, you would explode. Now, you burped a lot, but you didn't explode, because I ate a lot of Pop Rocks as a kid.
Yes, apparently that's what set off, that was part of what set off the scare. And so it got so bad that in Seattle, they set up a special hotline, and then General Foods did a whole campaign, and they sent around 50,000 letters to school principals explaining that everything was A-okay. They even sent the inventor of the candy on a tour to explain the science and why they were not harmful.
You know, the thing that's really irking me about that is like, really? I find it amazing that people couldn't figure that on their own. It just seems weird to me that you would freak out about something so basic and simple. Like, if that were actually happening, every kid on earth was eating Pop Rocks in the 70s. So it's crazy that they had to set up a hotline. That is the most insane part of this, which was the point of your fact. I'm going to go with a flat 9, just because that's insane that they had to set that up. But I'm not totally shocked by that, because people sometimes just freak out.
Apparently, they thought, because of the actual science, they thought there was a different... I was reading this. Like, they thought... Wait, let me find it. people thought it contained something it didn't.
Did you ever try them, or were they off the market by the time you were?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think they're back. I think they exist now. I ate these growing up. So apparently people thought it had an acid base mixture inside.
And so it was going to like burn a hole in your stomach?
Yeah, which would produce large volumes of gas when mixed with chewing and saliva, but they did not have a acid base mixture inside.
Yeah. I mean, I remember literally one of my friends telling me that rumor about Mikey and people dying. And I was eating Pop Rocks at the time. And I'm like, dude, I was like 10. And I'm like, you seriously believe that? That's ridiculous. I've been eating.
You didn't fall for it?
No, ready? No, I was literally, as he's telling me this, I'm pouring more Pop Rocks in my mouth.
Apparently on Mythbusters, they busted the myth. They put an exorbitant amount in a pig's stomach to try to explode it, and they couldn't do it.
That's what I love about Mythbusters. They don't just like do the myth. They put it to the absolute, like, well, what if you ate 20 bags at once really fast? What would happen?
Apparently its stomach got three times as big, but it didn't explode.
Now, something I wouldn't want to try, and I do not recommend, do not try this, anyone listening, is swallowing 7 or 8 Mentos and then pounding a liter of Coke. Because have you ever seen the explosion?
I had heard that would like make you explode.
I think that could make you explode, because you would not, either that or violently vomit and projectile vomit. I mean, that's, the vomiting is probably the more likely of the two, but like it expands so fast. It could definitely do some damage.
I actually don't like carbonated drinks anymore.
Oh, I can only drink seltzer compared to flat water. I can't do flat.
Really? Oh, I can't drink carbonated.
Gotta have carbonated.
No, no, no. It makes you like really, no. All that gas gets trapped in your stomach.
Yeah, but you know what I find? When I'm eating food with like Pellegrino, for example, I feel like the gas and the bubbles and maybe a little bit of the acid from the CO2 like helps my digestion.
That's what's so interesting. I feel like for some people, it really helps their digestion. For me, and then some people like me, it wrecks our digestion.
Yeah, because a lot of people drink it for to help with digestion.
Yeah, which is so mind-blowing to me because it's instant digestive distress.
Huh. Crazy. Yeah, no, for me, no matter what I'm eating, especially if it's pizza, gotta have carbonation with pizza.
Well, so we had two great facts there.
Yeah. Solid. We had a week, wasn't it last week? We both had sort of weak facts. So I think we came back strong.
I think so.
Yeah, we came back strong.
Awesome. Okay. Well, before we dive into today's topic, we have this week's winner of my Avalon X Magnesium 8, which is the best magnesium on the market. If you want a full spectrum magnesium, it has 8 different forms, no problematic fillers. It can help your muscle recovery. Speaking of digestion, helps your digestion, that's for sure. And your motility in that department, if you know what I mean, and helps your energy, your mood, all the things. It's really great. And it would help Scott with all of the stuff that he's doing around the house. And to enter to win, you can just write a review of the show on Apple Podcasts. And every week we pick a winner. And this week's winner is RachCL1. And she says, a must listen. I can't get enough of the Mind Blown podcast. Melanie Avalon and Scott Emmons bring an infectious energy to every episode. Their discussions are always well-researched and thought-provoking. This podcast has quickly become my go-to for a mix of education and entertainment. Don't miss out. So thank you so much, RageCL1. That was such a lovely, beautiful, supportive review. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Send a screenshot of your review to contact@mindblownshow.com and you will win a bottle. No, you will get a bottle of Avalon X Magnesium 8. And for everybody else, you can use the code MINDBLOWN. That will get you 10% off site-wide at avalonx.us. That's where you can get Magnesium 8. You can get Magnesium Nightcap for the brain. You can get Berberine for blood sugar control, Serrapeptase for inflammation and sinuses, and Spirulina for the most nutritious, basically wonder food available. Hi, friends. If you've been wanting to try my Avalon X Spirulina or are already obsessed like me and want a portable, travel-friendly version, we now have a mini size available. I am so excited about this. I am obsessed with spirulina because it is one of the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet. In fact, it is so nutrient-dense that NASA worked with it to help support the nutrition of the astronauts in space. It is a powerhouse. We're talking a complete vegan protein where a serving contains 625% of your daily vitamin B12. Yes, vegan B12, over 1,500% of your daily vitamin A, 100% of your hard-to-get vitamin K, and over half of your daily iron. And it's not just that. It also contains potent longevity compounds, things like glutathione, superoxide dismutase, CoQ10, GLA, and so much more. It's almost shocking how incredible spirulina is for your body. So much of our health and longevity involves meeting our nutrient status, and spirulina can help you do that. It supports energy, immunity, even beauty and detox. It took a long time to develop our spirulina because I was obsessive with getting the purest, highest quality spirulina out there. I searched high and low and found the perfect version of spirulina. It comes from the pristine, clean waters of Hawaii, from an extremely environmentally sustainable production facility, and it is purity tested to the max. Not only is it tested by the facility, we third-party tested it for over 70 pesticides, as well as heavy metals and mold. And the new mini version is so cute, so it's an amazing way to try it if you haven't tried it, or if you want to buy a smaller order, or if you want to travel with it, it's the way to go. It comes in beautiful glass bottles to help prevent leaching of plastics into ourselves and the environment. And by the way, it tastes amazing. Yes, I tasted so many different ones. You can get spirulina, including the large bag and this new mini size, at avalonx.us. Use the coupon code MelanieAvalon to get 10% off. And you can get text updates when you text AvalonX to 877-861-8318. And doing that will get you a one-time 20% off coupon code. You can also get email list updates at avalonx.us/email list. I can't wait for you guys to try this spirulina. Grab the mini version now. Use the coupon code MelanieAvalon for 10% off at avalonx.us. Shall we jump into today's topic?
We shall.
So for listeners, this is a part two. Last week, we had part one. We're exploring triangles, mysterious triangles, geographically speaking, in the world. Last week, we did Alaska, the Alaska Triangle, Alaskan Triangle. And this week, we are doing Bridgewater, which I know nothing about.
So Bridgewater is probably the least known and very different from the Alaska and Bermuda Triangle, which is more about missing planes and mysterious, you know, anomalies. So this one's kind of interesting. It is also referred to as Cursed Land or the Devil's Swamp.
Oh, that sounds not so happy.
Yeah, it's a small 200 square mile area in southeastern Massachusetts described as, quote, paranormal Disney World or a smorgasbord of strange phenomena. Yes. In 1970, here's how it got started, right? 1970, two police officers and their cruisers near Hammock Swamp experienced a vehicle being lifted and dropped by a massive, hairy-like bear creature running on two legs.
A what? A dog? A beagle?
A massive, hairy, bear-like creature running on two legs. What does that sound like?
Oh, the car is lifted up. I wasn't sure what got lifted up.
Yes, the car was lifted up. Yes, their police cruiser was literally lifted up into the air and then dropped by this massive, hairy, bear-like creature running on two legs.
Bigfoot?
Well, they don't say that, but what else has two legs and picks up a car and is hairy? I'm thinking Bigfoot. And there are, in this triangle, there are a lot of cryptid sightings of all different types. So then this creature vanishes without a trace. This is one of the kind of typical Bridgewater Triangle experiences. Considering this was reported by these two police officers, as it stated, what do you think? You think this is some kind of prank? You think they misidentified it? Could it have been a bear? Or what? Or are you going with Bigfoot?
Well, I wouldn't think it would be a prank if it was police officers, unless they had a history of doing this.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to report massive hairy-like creature running on two legs as a prank. They might have done like the drop the car thing, like, but that seems extreme. So I'm going to say Bigfoot. The only other theory is it was an actual bear or a prank or, you know, teenage kids playing a joke.
But to lift a car, I feel like it can't be a kid.
Well, you'd need like four high school football players, one of which is wearing a big hairy suit.
Okay, true. I guess that could happen.
I feel like they would have spotted four kids running and heard them laughing and, you know.
And you said this was 1970s?
On the date, 1970, yeah. And this is why, you know, this will lend more credence to it. So what the Bridgewater Triangle is known for is UFOs, Bigfoot, giant birds, typically thunderbirds, but also sometimes like birds from prehistoric times, like pterodactyls, ghosts, phantom hitchhikers, and alleged satanic cult rituals.
And is there a town here? I mean, there's police officers. They're towns. Wait, 200 square miles, you said? I'm really bad with...
Yeah, so Bridgewater is the main town of the triangle, but there are dozens of towns within this. It's in Massachusetts, so it's very, you know, densely populated in southern Mass.
Oh, it looks so cute. I'm looking at pictures of it. I love looking at pictures of towns.
So, yeah, it's a cool little... I mean, Massachusetts is a quaint place to visit, too. So the name actually came in the 1970s by cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman, who drew its boundaries from Abington, Rehoboth, and Freetown. So those are the three towns that make up this triangle. Deliberately named in homage to the Bermuda Triangle to create a powerful modern, quote, brand.
Okay. So you're saying that there could be some ulterior motives here?
No, I don't think it had ulterior motives. I think he just wanted to bring notoriety to this bizarre area with these bizarre phenomena. And, you know, you got to give him credit. I think if he had named it the Bridgewater area, that doesn't have the same buzz to it.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah. So I give him credit for the spooky name, given all of the UFO sightings and bizarre reports that happened all throughout the 70s and up until today. So here's where the roots and sort of the weirdness begin. Hockomock Swamp is an ancient and sacred land, nearly 17,000 acres of wetland, considered the heart of the triangle, and for thousands of years it was a sacred place among the Wampanoag people, who called it Hockomock, which stands for the place where spirits dwell. That's kind of eerie.
Yeah, I'm looking at pictures of this too. Swamps are not my favorite place.
Swamps are my least favorite place, and they should be, because they kill everything that enters them. You got alligators, snakes, water moccasins, mosquitoes, you know, you name it, diseases.
And they're wet.
Yeah. And you know what happens if your feet and your body is just constantly wet, you know, your toenails fall off, you get trench foot. Not good.
Not a fan.
Not a fan. So the colonials come and they're like looking at this same crazy swamp and they're like, yeah, this is the devil swamp. So independent, they came to the same perspective. And now we've talked about these places that, you know, have the name like, you know, Devil Canyon, Evil Peak, you know, the devil's den. There is a much higher incidence of paranormal and bizarre happenings in these places that are named, you know, Devil Swamp. In Dyatlov Pass, you know, the name of it was like Land of the Dead or something like that. So, you know, stay away from those kinds of places.
Yeah, I was just thinking of Dyatlov Pass.
Yeah, I still love that story. It's still, every once in a while, I'll see something on TV and I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch this. It's never as good as our podcast, but it's always interesting.
It's wild. Listeners, check it out. It was one of the first episodes on the show. Well, I don't know, like top 10. I think it was like it was a while ago.
Yeah, it was one of the first 10 for sure. Yeah, it was early on. There was a brutal conflict led by the Wampanoag to drive out the colonists. And so the swamp served as a strategic fortress for the Wampanoag tribe. The war was devastating, towns burned, hundreds killed on both sides. Eventually, Native Americans were enslaved and executed.
Whoa, okay, bad energy here. So, and it was already called, wait, and before that, it was already called?
Before any of this happens, right, it's already called the place where spirits dwell, and also like a sacred burial ground and a source of life. So it was both like the place where you die and also are reborn. So kind of metaphysical there.
And then they had this horrible battle and did horrible things.
Yeah. So both sides lost hundreds, but ultimately the colonists captured the Native Americans and enslaved and executed them. Now, the Wampanoag legends and oral traditions claim that the land had been cursed in retaliation for their treatment. In particular, the chief cursed the land. And other legends tie the paranormal's unrest to the loss of the sacred Wampanoag belt during the war. My theory is I'm going with the cursed land, which was already, you know, weird to begin with. But this also takes place at Skinwalker Ranch, where the Ute Nation cursed the land because the Navajos were becoming skinwalkers and basically at war with the Ute tribe. And so the Utes cursed that land. And now you see all this bizarre paranormal stuff happening on Skinwalker Ranch.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds cursed lands, not the place to hang out.
No, especially when they start with the name devil or spirit dwelling. Archaeologists are dating this site back 9,000 years and that it had been an ancient burial ground, perhaps as long as 8,000 years ago. You've got a lot of spirits in there, and if your ancestors are part of those spirits and you curse the land, the spirits just might listen.
And so there's also a lot of bodies, right? Because it was a burial ground.
Then a bloody war, and then, yes, thousands of bodies. If you figure it's 8,000 years, that's thousands of, you know, the ancestors of the Wampanoag tribe and their ancestors.
Man, this would not be the place to go, like, I don't know, digging for rocks. It might be bones. Like, you know, like little kids going and like digging up dirt, coming up, like, look what I found. And it's like a knuckle bone.
A femur, a jawbone. So there's also a 5,000-acre forest, and this is the Freetown-Fall River State Forest, and it has sort of a dual reputation for otherworldly, quote, horror, and then also real-world crime, including gangland murders, suicides, and again, satanic cult ritual, allegedly.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the satanic cult. Okay.
Yeah, which, you know, I thought my parents were crazy in the 80s, but turns out there was a lot of satanic stuff going on. So kind of crazy.
Remember when I was growing up, one of my friends said in their, like out in the woods behind their house, that there was a satanic cult.
In the house?
No, outside, like in the woods behind their house.
Well, let's take a brief aside. So have you ever heard the theory about like Ouija boards opening up portals?
Yes. My mom always made it very clear, never engage with a Ouija board.
We talked about that once. So I wonder, like, if these satanic rituals do the same thing. I would imagine that they do, that they can open up really bizarre portals to and let crazy, weird, evil entities in.
I mean, it would not surprise me.
Yeah. And we could do a whole episode on Aleister Crowley and Jack Parsons. And guess who else was part of that? Gene Roddenberry and what was the guy that did Scientology? What was his name?
Hubbard,
yeah. They had a whole thing going on in the Southwest.
Gene Roddenberry?
Was definitely Hubbard. I think Gene Roddenberry might have been involved, but definitely Hubbard, Jack Parsons, and Aleister Crowley. And Jack Parsons was the guy who drove us in from JPL Labs, who created NASA's engines and rockets. He was the guy that figured out how to make solid-state rocket fuel. So he was like a genius, but also crazy into the occult.
Oh, okay. That's great.
It'd be a cool episode.
Okay, friends. I have some mind-blowing and scary facts about your skincare and makeup. Did you know that there's essentially no regulation of skincare and makeup in the US, and that most skincare and makeup products are high in endocrine disruptors, which mess with your hormones? These are compounds which are linked to hormonal disruption, thyroid issues, fertility issues, autoimmune conditions, and even cancer. And they are rampant in our skincare and makeup. That's right. When you're putting on that skincare and makeup to supposedly support your skin and help it look better, you actually could be doing damage to your skin and your body and your health. It is a massive problem today. And ladies, if you're thinking of having children, these compounds actually pass through the placenta into the newborn, setting up our children with a toxic burden from birth. And these compounds can last in our system for years and years. In one study testing conventional lipsticks, for example, most were found to be high in lead, and the half-life of lead is up to 30 years. That means when you put on some conventional lipstick, 30 years later, maybe half of that lead has left your bones. There's also a legal loophole from the 1960s where companies can put whatever they want in products and don't have to tell you what it is. They just put it under the label fragrance. This is why safe skincare and makeup is so important to me, and I am so passionate about a company called Crunchy. Their standards are impeccable. Crunchy products contain no toxic ingredients, which they define as any ingredient known to cause harm or health hazard based on available ingredient data and research. Each ingredient actually undergoes a 30-step screening criteria for safety. All the products are gluten-free, with third-party lab testing comparable to food standards. A ton of their products are non-GMO, just look for the badge on their website, and all of their products are vegan, except for their lip oil, which contains organic beeswax from humanely sourced regenerative beekeeping. All of their products are also Leaping Bunny certified, cruelty-free, with no animal testing, and made in the USA, with the exception of wooden pencils and accessories, which are made in American-owned factories in Germany with extremely high social, ethical, and environmental standards. And they use sustainable and environmentally conscious packaging with no plastic for primary packaging. Their products are also incredible. They make, hands down, the best mascara I have ever tried. Their Golden Light Multi-Peptide Facial Serum will make your skin glow. They also have an incredible Daylight Facial Cream and Nightlight Facial Cream, and an awesome makeup cleansing balm. You can check out their foundation as well, and their incredible sunscreen products. If you want safe sunscreen, you've got to try Crunchy. You can shop with me at crunchy.com/Melanie Avalon. That's crunchy.com/Melanie Avalon. And new customers can use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 to get 10% off eligible orders. New customers with me will also receive a gift from me after your first purchase. So again, for the ultimate in safe skincare and beauty, go to crunchy.com/Melanie Avalon and use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 for 10% off, as well as a free gift from me. For all the latest discounts, specials, and announcements from me in the world of safe skincare and clean beauty, definitely get on my email list. That's at melanieavalon.com/cleanbeauty. For all the latest text updates, just text skincare, one word, to 877-861-8318. That's the word skincare to 877-861-8318.
So there's also this 50-foot granite outcropping rock, which is starting to collapse, and it has a striking resemblance to Chief Massasoit. And the legend says that the ghost of the man, the chief, can be seen sitting on this rock from time to time. And that is crazy. It's also where when the Wampanoag belt was lost, it was returned to Chief Anawan. So just a little sort of aside, some historical notes. There's an 80-foot deep abandoned granite quarry where people report seeing phantom figures leaping from cliffs, and it leaves them feeling completely overwhelmed with the feeling of dread and this unnatural urge to jump in to said abandoned granite quarry.
That's, and so what were those? Were those like used to dig out stuff?
Yeah, so basically these are mining quarries that they were digging out limestone or granite, most likely. It's a granite quarry. So yeah, they were digging out granite. And once you've kind of gotten the granite you need, the quarry basically just fills up with water and then they just leave it be. And that's a lot of times when you see like movies where people are jumping into those, like they're on cliffs and they're jumping into these lakes. Those are usually quarries.
Like at the beginning of A Walk to Remember?
I didn't see that one, but probably.
Oh, you are missing out on one of the best movies of all time.
What's it called? The Walk?
A Walk to Remember.
What's it about?
Okay, wait, you know this movie. There's no way you don't. This is the defining Nicholas Sparks. You know Nicholas Sparks?
Nah.
Like the go-to sad romantic novelist of the past two decades.
I have read about zero.
The Notebook. Are you familiar?
Oh, God. The Notebook was painful for me.
Okay, that's him. So A Walk to Remember is one of his big ones. And there was a movie in 2002 with Mandy Moore and Shane West. One of my favorite movies of all time.
I just looked it up on my phone real quick just to kind of get a visual. does not look familiar.
It is so good. If you want a good cry.
I bet you it is a quarry that they jump into.
Yeah. At the beginning, they jump. There's just like this water and they're like daring this kid to jump off into it.
Does he?
Yeah. I can tell you that because it's literally like in the first scene. And then he gets hurt. It's literally the first scene. The only reason I can tell you this.
Yeah, I would bet it is a quarry. I'm looking at a picture of what I think is the movie. No, that's not the movie. All right. It's probably a quarry, but a lot of movies, like, they'll show that scene where they're on cliffs. And almost every time, it's a quarry. But what I find so crazy is, like, not only are they feeling this incredible, like, dread, but then this inexplicable and, quote, overwhelming, unnatural urge to jump in.
Yikes.
That's crazy.
Although, this is going to make me sound crazy if you don't know what I'm talking about. So hopefully you know what I'm talking about. Do you ever get the feeling when you're on top of like something like this, if you're in that situation, where you're like, oh, I could just jump off? Not like because you want to or emotionally or anything, but it's just like, oh, what if I just did that? Like you get this like, not urge to jump off, but you get this like, feeling.
I know the feeling you're talking about. Almost like I would call it like an impulse or like a what would happen moment, but not an overwhelming urge, unnatural urge. So I can give you a specific example. I remember in my 20s, I took my wife to the Empire State Building, maybe late 20s, something like that. And when we got to the top floor and I was looking over the window out, you know, or over the deck. I can't remember if we're outside or inside. I think it was inside because I don't remember having any desire when I was outside. I was more like a little freaked out. But when I was in this tall building, and I'm pretty sure it was the Empire State Building, and looking through the window, I was like, huh, wouldn't that be so cool to just like jump and see how long I could fly? Like knowing I'm never going to do it and knowing I would die, but like wondering what that moment in the air would be like. So I get what you're saying.
Mine, so I'm glad you've had that feeling, but I'm glad I don't come off as completely crazy. Mine is never like, oh, I wonder what this would feel like. This would be fun. It's more just like this inexplainable, what if I just jumped off? I'm not even like really thinking about it.
Yeah, I could see that because I have been at quarries and cliff diving where I'm like, what if I just jumped? And I have done cliff diving and it's really fun. Yeah, in Jamaica. Oh, it was so much fun. The crazy part about that, though, was because of the way the water refracts, it looks like it's like 5 feet deep, even though it's 25 or 30 feet deep. So you're at like this 60-foot cliff, which doesn't sound that high, but when you're at 60 feet, that's pretty high, you know? I'm asking the Jamaican guy, I'm like, are you sure that's 25 feet? It looks like it's 5 feet deep. He's like, yo, man, I'm positive. It's 25 feet, man. I'm like, it just looks a lot. Shit. He's like, I promise, man, 25 feet. So I'm like, all right, fine. So I jump off and then all my friends jumped off. And then we spent the whole day jumping off that cliff and going from cliff to cliff. And the guy, he was so cool. He took us all over Jamaica to different cliffs. It was one of the most fun days I'd ever had.
Yeah, that's awesome. And not my cup of tea.
Yeah, but I find that really creepy because... just creepy. All right. So now here we move on to another mystery. There's a 40-ton boulder covered in petroglyphs of unknown origin. It was originally in the Taunton Riverbed, but moved to a museum in 1963. And yet no one has been able to decipher what exactly these petroglyphs or what language it's in. Now there's some theories, but no one knows.
What would I Google to look at this?
Google Digton Rock, Digton.
Okay. Oh, with these little, with all this writing on it?
Mm-hmm.
That looks creepy.
Right?
Yeah. I don't like that language. I don't like whatever is written on it. But it looks kind of modern. Like it looks like scribbles. It looks like modern scribbles. Like there's little smiley faces.
I don't see any smiley. Well, okay, I guess I see what you're talking. I see what you're saying by like modern. Yeah, modern-esque.
It looks like a child scribbled it with little faces and scribbles.
Yeah, but then what about the stuff on the bottom? Looks more like a very articulate language.
On the bottom?
Yeah, you might be looking at a different image, but underneath the scribbled pictures are these more sophisticated looking geometric symbols.
Yeah, I see those, but it doesn't look very, I guess the reason I'm saying modern, it doesn't look very, it just looks very scrambly.
It does look very scrambly. But if you're carving into granite too, I mean, that can't be easy.
Oh, wow. So this is carved in. So it could just be ancient graffiti.
Yeah. It is carved in, so I'm imagining carving things is fairly difficult into granite.
That's true. Why are you going to spend all that time?
And they are kind of creepy looking.
Yeah. I wouldn't want that in my apartment.
So there's, you know, Cotton Mather described the rock in his book, The Wonderful Worlds. Basically, here's his little blurb. Among the other curiosities of New England, one is of a mighty rock on its perpendicular side, whereof by a river, this old language, old English is tough to read, which high tide covers part of it, engraved no man alive knows how, when, or about a score of lines, near 10 feet long. Wow, it's 10 feet long. Holy crap. And a foot and a half broad, filled with strange characters, which would suggest old thoughts about where and here before us, and there are odd shapes and elaborate in an elaborate monument. So even in the 1600s, they're talking about this thing. So it wasn't a modern, you know, hoax.
Yeah, I'm not saying it is modern. I'm saying it looks, I'm not describing well why I think it.
No, I'm saying for the listeners, just to clarify, like, this goes back a ways, because I would be thinking, like, well, maybe they did it in 1961 as, like, a gimmick.
Yeah, that's weird. Does not have a good vibe about it.
Yeah. You know what's interesting is you can tell, you know how you can just look at an image and get a vibe whether it's good or not good? And you said these are creepy. It's like, when you look at a way a person's face, you know, their expression they're making or their body language, you can tell whether they're mad or upset. I find it interesting that you can look at certain images and just go, that just feels wrong.
Yeah, I was just thinking that, like how intuitive it is and how you can instantly tell.
Yeah, I think people are much more intuitive than we give ourselves credit for.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think most people would agree too. You know, like I feel like everybody could look at the same thing and most people would say the same thing about if it was a good vibe or a bad vibe.
Yeah, that'd be a cool experiment. That's a bad vibe for me.
They should. I'm sure they've done that. I bet they have. But that would be a really good experiment.
So there are three different theories. First, that it was the early ancestors of the Native Americans. One is it was ancient Phoenicians. And then Chinese explorers, Vikings, or potentially the Portuguese explorer Miguel Corte Real in 1511, that doesn't look like a Portuguese sort of drawing to me. So not so sure about that.
That's what's weird. It looks just like mad scribbles.
Yes, agreed.
Doesn't look eloquent.
No, eloquent is definitely not. All right, so there's more stones that we get to look up. Remember that rock I said looked like the Indian chief? You got to see this. I'm going to just text this to you. This is... It really does look like a human head. That's crazy. Here you go. Take a look.
Whoa. And you're saying, so people think that's carved, or are people saying that it just naturally looks like that? And for listeners, this is a boulder that looks like an Indian chief head profile.
So my understanding, I couldn't confirm this, is that it's just a natural formation. It was not carved.
Well, we do know we see faces.
That's pretty tough to not see a face there. But yes, the brain does, what is that, what do they call pareidolia?
Oh, is that the word for it?
That's the word for it, yes. Where you see shapes and things in the clouds, particularly, we're most likely to see human faces is our the most common form of pareidolia.
Very cool.
Yeah. There's also a fun little rock. An inscribed stone located near Forest Street, west of Bridgewater, was found near a missing person's body, also known as the suicide stone. The rock was found with an inscription: "All ye who in future days walk by the non Katakasa stream, love not him who hummed his lay cheerfully to the parting beam, but the beauty that wooded. I don't know what that means, but it's weird. And apparently they call this the suicide stone.
Again, not the best vibes.
Yeah, bad vibes. Tales of former patients who have touched this area. They also claim that they've been infected by spirits, and visitors claim the use of satanic cults on this particular stone. There's also an abandoned Taunton State Hospital where patients say that they had satanic cults in the hospital, and they are, or the abandoned hospital in the 60s and the 70s.
Do you know what I left out of the reality TV episode that we did?
No.
I did a ghost hunting pilot and we filmed in an abandoned hospital.
Oh boy.
I was so scared going, but it was not that scary because it was during the day and there was a whole production set, like production team. But yeah, it was wild.
Let me ask you this. Did you experience any feelings or hear anything weird?
Not really. I find it so interesting, the difference between day versus night. Like if we had been there at night, probably would have been terrifying, but it was during the day.
Night is so creepy.
Isn't it interesting though, like how that happens? Like how a place can be so scary, but if it's during the day, it's not that scary.
There's like a show with this guy, Zach, Ghost Hunters or whatever. I forget what it's called, but Ghost something. And they oftentimes will go to like old sanitariums, you know, old mental institutions that are abandoned, and they go at night, and man, it creeps me out. And you know the thing that creeps me out the most sometimes are the EVPs they get. You know, like they turn on the recorder and then they ask it a question and then they listen back and like they hear an answer. And I'm like, that is weird.
My cousin and I used to do that. We used to like go ghost hunting and record and listen back.
Did you ever get anything?
Never anything shocking. There were like a few things, but never anything. We would like leave a camera down in the basement, like leave it on for hours and then fast forward the footage and watch it.
I could totally see myself doing that with my old VHS camera.
Yeah, it was great fun. We did go to this supposedly haunted graveyard in Atlanta, and we were too scared. We didn't even go in. We drove all the way there, and then we were too scared to actually go. Such a fail.
I would love to try it, but I'm afraid, like, if I heard an EVP in my own house, I would be so freaked out, I wouldn't be able to sleep here.
Yeah, that's a benefit of going somewhere else.
But check this out. Cape May has some of, like, it's got a ton of bed and breakfasts, many of which are said to be haunted because they're all like from the 1700s. Late 1700s to late 1800s. Anyway, point being, I could go there, spend the night, do an EVP, and then it wouldn't be in my house. That would be nice.
You know what? A, you should do that. B, we haven't done, I don't think we've done any haunted houses on this show.
We haven't. We had talked about doing the Sally House.
There's so many of them. We need to do that. Wait, no, we did Sally House. We did Sally House. But we weren't focusing on how it was haunted. We were talking more about, like, did she actually kill all those people?
Are you talking about Lizzie Borden?
Oh, Lizzie Borden. I'm sorry. I'm getting things confused.
Yeah, the Sally House is in Kansas. It's supposed to be the most haunted house in America.
We need to do that, like, yesterday.
I'd love to do that. And then I will also see if I can get some local haunted bed and breakfast insights. And we could do like a mini episode on that. But the Sally House is, it's dark.
Yeah, we should do some haunted things for sure.
There's a podcast called Astonishing Legends, and they went there. And one of the guys who didn't believe in it went into the most haunted room and did like the EVP thing and asked it a question. And when he played the recording back, it was this shrieking, demonic scream that lasted about 15 seconds. He said it scared him so much for weeks afterwards, he wasn't the same. He said it took him months to fully recover from that, going to that house.
Yeah.
And he was like...
skeptical.
Yeah, super skeptical. The other guy, Forrest, his partner, was like, you know, I don't know, Scott, this place, you shouldn't underestimate the paranormal. He's like, yeah, paranormal, schmaranormal. And then he gets all these, and then afterwards, like, his brake lines went, and it was a whole thing. It was really interesting.
Yeah, we should totally do it. Wait, what were we talking about that was haunted? How do we get on this track?
because of all the haunted places in the Bridgewater Triangle.
The hospital.
Yes. So in addition to the Bridgewater Hospital, Bridgewater University has several buildings said to have substantial haunting.
Thrilling announcement, friends. My EMF blocking product line is finally here, and I'm going to tell you how you can get 10% off. Did you know that EMFs are considered a type 2B carcinogen by the IARC? They are linked to so many health issues, including headaches, migraines, fatigue, and even potential fertility issues. Thankfully, there are a lot of ways to reduce your exposure, and one of the best ways is to not use Bluetooth AirPods. And also, do not put your phone by your head. In fact, did you know that if you look in your iPhone, go to the legal section, and then RF exposure, Apple literally suggests that you use hands-free options like speakerphone, headphones, or other similar accessories to reduce your exposure to EMFs. Yes, it says this in your iPhone. And here's the other thing. Even wired headphones, being digital, can conduct EMFs into your head. That's why I made Avalon X EMF-free air tubes. They're basically like your normal wired headphones, but they turn into analog closer to your ear, so it stops transmission of EMFs into your head. I'm launching with black ones and rose gold. You can use adapters to make them fit any phone. And the reason this launch took so long, we're talking actually years, is because I was so neurotic on getting good sound quality. I cannot even tell you how many different prototypes I tried, but we finally have them, and you can get them now. Go to AvalonXEMF.us and use the code Melanie Avalon to get 10% off. That's AvalonXEMF.us with the coupon code Melanie Avalon to get 10% off. That link will actually redirect to my partner's website at Shield Your Body, and that coupon code Melanie Avalon will get you 10% off site-wide for all of their EMF blocking products, including my air tubes. AvalonXEMF.us with the coupon code Melanie Avalon for 10% off.
On to the unexplained and the cryptids. Bigfoot. Common reports of huge ape-like creatures happened frequently throughout the area. In 1978, Joseph DeAndrea had a sighting and reported a voice in his head telling him to, quote, turn around, at which point he saw a creature like Frankenstein into the bush. This experience led him to form the Bridgewater Triangle Expedition team. Now, what's interesting about what he's saying is there's another podcast I listen to put me to like my bedtime story. It's called Sasquatch Chronicles. And one of the most common things that people report, I shouldn't say one of the most common, a common thing that people report is a voice in their head. And often that voice is telling them to leave or turn around and go in direct sighting of a Sasquatch.
I just want to draw attention to the moment we just had where you said so deadpan with complete seriousness, which I understand it's serious, but you're like, for my bedtime stories when I'm listening to Sasquatch Chronicles.
You know what? That is hilarious.
I was like, oh my gosh, does he hear himself right now?
I was so deadpan about it. That's so funny. And I was, you know, obviously super skeptical and still am, but there's a famous guy called Survivor Man. He did the original like survival TV show on Discovery Channel. And on that podcast, he after his show was long off the air and he didn't care anymore, he admitted that that's happened to him, that he had voice like it's like an internal telepathy in your head. And I was like, well, if he's saying it, then maybe there's something to it. But still skeptical on that one. I think I lean towards Bigfoot is out there. I lean towards some kind of paranormal thing. But the head talking, that's, I guess, if I'm talking about hairy giant apes, I guess nothing's too far. Thunderbird. So 1971, Norton Police Sergeant Thomas Downey saw a creature 6 feet tall with a 8 to 12 foot wingspan fly straight up and disappear into the swamp near Bird Hill. Other sightings have described giant pterodactyl-like monstrosities commonly spotted over the swamp.
Maybe it's the dinosaurs.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, maybe this is back to our portal matrix theory, you know? Maybe there's some sort of time portal there. Maybe it's spiritual. Who knows? Over that swamp, a lot of things are happening. Other cryptids, tales of giant 100-foot snakes. This one, which is a phenomenon all over the world, often referred to as the hounds of hell, in this case called phantom black dogs with glowing red eyes. They're usually 4 to 5 feet in height on all four legs and 5 to 6 feet long. So these are massive black dogs, and they often, if not always, report these glowing red eyes, which would really freak me out.
So again, shout out to Wishbone, best TV show ever known to mankind. One of the novels they did had these scary hounds with glowing eyes. Is there some old novel about that?
Hounds
of Baskerville or something?
I don't know if that's about dogs with glowing red eyes, but I know what you're talking about.
Because I remember in the Wishbone, which, again, thank you, Wishbone, for letting me know these novels. They would talk about these hounds with scary eyes. And then at the end, somebody was keeping hounds like in the attic.
Why would they keep them in the attic?
I feel like to fuel the legend. Am I making things up?
So it was a Sherlock Holmes novel written by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, The Hounds of Baskerville. And they were supposed to be supernatural perversions of evil.
The hound was a single large dog, kept hidden in a stone outbuilding. Okay, well.
Yep, but historically, there's a lot of history about these kinds of dogs, these evil dogs. There is a long-standing tradition of these hounds of hell, so it's not like a new thing. These go back to Greek mythology with three-headed dogs that guarded the gates of Hades and prevented the dead from leaving and the living from entering. There is Norse mythology that also had these guards, these guard dogs of hell. Celtic mythology, which had these also underworld hounds with glowing eyes. In English folklore, it's the black dog, a specter of demonic hellhounds. Notable examples are Barghest and Black Shuck, which are said to haunt ancient pathways, crossroads, and evacuation sites. Germanic mythology, hellhounds appear as bloodthirsty guardians and hunters, sometimes also guarding the underworld. They have fiery, glowing red eyes, and then sometimes yellow eyes, symbolizing supernatural and potentially evil. They're said to have supernatural strength and described as abnormally large and powerful. Encounters with these creatures summon omens of death and harbingers of doom or death. Some legends say they can become invisible or disappear at will. They have now entered the popular pop culture, including in Harry Potter, The Supernatural, in the movie Hercules, Dungeons and Dragons, and other video games include these bizarre hellhounds.
And now they are in, so people see these in the Bridgeport Triangle.
Yes, they're one of the more commonly reported terrifying creatures spotted. Then we have, and we've talked about this in the cryptid episode, the Pukwudgies. These are small, gray-skinned, troll-like creatures that come from the Wampanoag folklore and known to be dangerous tricksters who push people off of cliffs and attack them with poison arrows.
Not cool.
Yes. Now, what's crazy is that there have been reports of these by very credible witnesses, including police sergeants in the area. So these little Pukwudgies try to lure people into the forest or lure them towards them, and they can come across and change their shape briefly, or they're not really changing their shape. They're changing your brain to make them appear like a child or something harmless, when in fact they're this Pukwudgie.
Okay. So don't help the harmless children.
Well, just, hey kid, you'll be fine. You put them in the black eyed kids category. Just walk away. It's safer. Imagine that you're you're walking down the road and there's a kid asking for help near the edge of the woods. And you're like, no, sorry, can't help you, kid. gotta keep going.
Yeah.
Now, UFO activity in this area is given its relatively small geographic size, there are an enormous amount of sightings of UFOs in this area. In 1976, two UFOs reportedly landed on Route 44, landed on the highway.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, witnessed by multiple people, obviously. It was on a highway. And in March of 1979, radio newsman Jerry Lopes saw a home plate-shaped craft with bright red lights atop with rows of lights, and then all around the edges at the junction of Route 24 and 106. And then in 1994, a local law enforcement officer reported a triangle-shaped craft with red and white lights similar to the one in 79 flying directly over his police patrol car. And he reported that as an official report to his department. Nothing came of it, but kind of interesting. Now, the skeptics say, well, it's close to Logan Airport, but I'm pretty sure you can tell the difference between a triangular-shaped aircraft and not. So, especially if you're a police officer and you live there, like, I'm sure you've seen hundreds of planes. Now, what's crazy is these sightings go back to 1760. Pretty crazy.
Plus, if it was a plane, wouldn't that be reported? Like, they would know it was a plane?
Yeah, you'd be able to say, well, there was a plane over that area at that time. Yeah, absolutely. Do you remember in the cryptid episode when I talked about the man in the flannel shirt, the flannel man?
Remind me?
Basically, tall, muscular, fit guy wearing a red and black flannel shirt with a beard who just, like, stares at you. So they call him the red-headed hitchhiker of 44, and multiple drivers report picking up a man in a flannel shirt only for him to break into disturbing, hysterical, or demonic laughter before vanishing from their car. Now that would leave a mark.
Yeah. I feel like hitchhiking back in the day used to be like, it wasn't a scary thing. Like now I feel like it's, you know, not to pick up hitchhikers.
Yeah. Hitchhiking now, no good.
Even though you're probably safer now than ever for doing that.
Probably in a weird way, right? Because everyone has cameras and cell phones and, but there's also like way more weirdos. Like I think part of what made hitchhiking safe is the communities were much more tight. The families were much more tight. Most of the families knew each other's families from around town. So I feel like there was a built-in safety mechanism there. Whereas now people are so detached from like their neighbors. I mean, I lived in a townhome for a while. I barely knew my neighbor right to my left.
Yeah, I don't know my neighbors at all.
And I think in the 60s, 70s, and even early 80s, people really knew, like I knew. And when I grew up in my house from like 77 to 85, I lived in that house. I knew every neighbor within, I'd say, three blocks minimum, plus dozens of people along the way. Like on my way to school, when I would walk to school uphill both ways, literally.
Wait, how is that literal? How is that literal?
Because you would walk down the hill, and then to get to the school, you had to walk up another hill. And then so you'd walk down the hill. And then on the way home, I had to walk all the, because we lived at the top of a hill. I have to go down to a valley and then back up to the school, which was up a hill. So I literally walked uphill two ways. But that was elementary school, up to sixth grade. And I knew probably every third house I knew who lived there. The mom, the dad, the kids.
Yeah, I knew my neighbors growing up. Well, like our main neighbors.
Yeah. And I think that was the big difference. But right around when I was old enough to hitchhike, that's when it became like, don't hitchhike. Stranger danger. So we're going to wrap up here. So the other sort of weird things are around the Anawan Rock that we talked about earlier. People claim to see the spirits of the Wampanoag warriors dancing and see what they know is not fire, but appears to be like a spectral or mystical fire. So that's kind of interesting. And then one of probably the most common thing that you'll see are mysterious orbs that seem to operate with some level of intelligence.
So not ball lightning?
No. Well, ball lightning is incredibly rare. They still don't understand how it even forms. But no, these orbs are very, usually between like size of a orange to the size of a basketball, sort of that size range. And they range in different colors. So sometimes they're orange, sometimes they're blue, sometimes they're red. But what makes these unique is that the orbs are bright, but they don't project the light. In other words, like if you take a flashlight and you turn it on, it's going to project the light upward, right? Even if you take a candle, there's going to be some projection of the light. These seem to be self-contained light. Like there's, if it goes past a tree, it does not light up the leaves of the tree. It just keeps that light contained within it. And it's like a soft light, but bright and contained. And then they seem to move with purpose.
Very creepy.
Yeah. And finally, during 1979 and 1980, there was a substantial number of cult murders that occurred in the Fall River area inside the triangle. That wraps up the Bridgewater Triangle in a nutshell. It is a hodgepodge of pretty much every paranormal thing you can think of.
Wow. I kind of wish that I lived in Bridgewater. That would have been, man, talking about me wanting to have these adventures.
That could be, I would be willing to go there on a road trip. So if you're ever heading to the Northeast.
How far is it from you?
From here, it's probably about 6 hours.
Okay. As you know, I have no grasp on how close things are to each other in the Northeast. It's all one place to me.
I lived in Massachusetts and covered most of the state as a sales rep. And then my best friend lives there now, and I went to college there, and my son went to college there. So I am very familiar with Massachusetts and Rhode Island. So yeah, I could definitely be our tour guide. And if you're ever coming up this way, we will make plans to do a road trip.
Awesome. Where was Lizzie Borden House? Was that Massachusetts?
That was Massachusetts, yeah. In fact, I think it was Fall River.
Hmm. Well, awesome. Thank you. I had no idea about this creepy triangle location with all the things, apparently. The place to be.
You want paranormal? This is the spot. I'm not taking you over to the abandoned quarry. I don't want to have to talk you out of jumping in, because if that voice gets in your head, you're going in, and I don't want to have to jump in after you. I will, but I don't want to.
Yeah, we can skip that.
We'll skip that one.
Awesome. Well, thank you. That's really epic preparation. So what do you think it is? What do you think is the cause of all this craziness?
You tell me your theory first, and then I'll give you my theory.
I think there are just some places, this is what I've thought since I was little, that there are just some places on the world where for whatever reason, the like electromagnetic field is all messed up and it just makes weird things happen. Like that there's just like some weird places and everything's maybe that, I guess that could explain like ghost memories and like things missing and even like aliens, but then like the creatures and stuff. So maybe the creatures gather in these places.
I think they can be related, right? So let's say there's these weird magnetic anomalies. You know, electromagnetism is very powerful. So it could, in fact, invoke these things. It could create hallucinations. It could open up portals. I mean, it could do a lot of different things. Or to your point, maybe that's where the veil is the thinnest, and that's where these UFOs and things are attracted to, because magnetic energy allows them to use whatever technology or whatever they're doing or how they're getting here to get here. So it could be that. I think that's reasonable. And I think that applies to a lot of places. I think in this particular case, I think it's a combination of some bizarre effect of that swamp and some kind of weird magnetic issues with that swamp. And then all of the history and ancestry and sort of cursing of the land. You combine that with all the granite that's there, because there is a lot of granite in that area, which is highly electromagnetized through the piezoelectric effect of quartz, which is highly concentrated in granite. So I think it's a combination of magnetic anomalies and some sort of, you know, spiritual energy.
Yeah, that tracks. Okay, well, listeners, we hope you are enjoying all the triangles. And up next, in theory, we should have the Bermuda Triangle, the king of all triangles, at least popularly speaking. A brief reminder for this week's winner of my Avalon X Magnesium 8, that is Rach CL1. Take a screenshot of your review in your Apple Podcast app and send it to contact@mindblownshow.com, and we will send you a bottle of Avalon X Magnesium 8. Everybody else can use the code MINDBLOWN to get 10% off at avalonx.us. And yeah, I think that's all the things. Thanks, Scott, for all the prep.
Yeah, I had fun with this one.
I'm going to go. I always, after like slightly scary ish ones. I go to the grocery store to like be exposed to fluorescent lighting and people.
Well, I'm going to watch Veep because I missed the last two seasons and someone reminded me how funny that show is. So that will take my mind off it.
Perfect. Perfect game plan.
Cool. All right. Enjoy the grocery store.
Thank you. And I enjoy the, what is it? Deep? Oh, Veep. 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 Enjoy your comedy followed by your Sasquatch Chronicles.
And my bedtime story. That's going to go down as one of our, I'm going to get a Bigfoot emoji now for that, for our text messages.
Perfect. All right. I will talk to you next week.
All right. Talk to you next week, Mel. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Mind Blown podcast. Don't worry, your brain can store about 1 million gigabytes of data. That's enough memory to record continuous TV shows for over 300 years. That said, psychology suggests that your memory is actually just your memory of your last memory, leading to a process called memory distortion, where your memories change over time. If you're enjoying the show, remember to subscribe and write a brief review in Apple Podcasts, and definitely let us know what you find most mind-blowing.